Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In consultation with the business community and my top economic advisors, it is clear that the financial system, although improved from where it was in September, is still fragile.
President-elect Obama, a little off mic there, but if you were able to make it out, actually saying that the much-maligned TARP program is having a positive effect. And he talked about the need for Congress to release the second half of the so-called TARP money, the bailout money for financial institutions, the second $350 billion.
We're going to focus on housing and foreclosures. We're going to focus on small businesses. We're going to focus on what's required to make sure that credit is flowing to consumers and businesses to create jobs in the United States.
Congress has been balking because a lot of the things the president-elect just mentioned there were not in TARP 1. They've been so unsatisfied with the first $350 billion of expenditures, much of the money disappearing into the bank's coffers without being lent to borrowers to ease the credit crunch and without much transparency required for banks to even report how they're using it, without much that would help homeowners in foreclosure. So before we talk to Congressman Israel, a couple of more clips here. Congressman Barney Frank, chairman of the House Finance Committee, told Morning Edition this today about the failures, as he sees it, of TARP 1.
Inexplicably to me, the Bush administration ignored the very specific language in the first in their first efforts to deal with foreclosure. And we've asked that up to $100 billion of the $350 go to foreclosures, and if they don't do that, they got to explain why they couldn't. We're going to require the banks that get money to agree in advance that if they get money, they will relend it.
They will relend it to agree in advance and to do something about foreclosures, and that's not all that Congressman Frank wants.
We also specifically say in there that we want help for automobiles, that we want help for student loans, we want help for municipal governments that have been stalled out, and we want consumer credit and small business credit. And if those aren't done, then the administration has to specifically explain why it won't do it.
Now, Long Island Congressman Steve Israel joins us. And on this morning that Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State confirmation hearing is getting underway, Congressman Israel is one of those hoping to be appointed by Governor Patterson to replace her. Congressman Israel, thanks so much for coming on WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. You heard the president-elect there. You heard Congressman Frank there, chairman of the Finance Committee. From what you know so far, will you vote for TARP 2?
Well, I was on the House Financial Services Committee with Barney Frank for many years before getting on the Appropriations Committee. I do not believe that TARP 1 was entirely successful. You can make the argument that there is a slow thaw in the credit markets occurring because of TARP 1, but it has not done enough in terms of consumer credit, home financing, accessible college costs. And I will vote for the second tranche as long as there are strings attached to it that ensure that those three markets, consumer credit, home financing, and college costs, are significantly assisted by the release of TARP 2 funds.
Now, how would that actually work? And it sounded like a pretty long laundry list there from Barney Frank. This was originally meant to buy the toxic mortgage assets from the banks so they could figure out how much money they actually had and therefore figure out what they could afford to lend again. Now it's getting into not just relending requirements, but foreclosure assistance. He said for the automobiles, I guess maybe that means for car loans, mm-hmm. for small businesses, for consumer credit. That means, I guess, helping people get into more credit card debt. What is all that stuff doing in the TARP?
Well, yeah, obviously, Barney is currently working on the technical aspects of the release of TARP 2 funds so that we can ensure that if those funds are released and when they're released, they actually provide greater assistance to the consumer markets. The fact of the matter is that the first tranche, while it did provide for a rather slow thawing of the credit markets, it hasn't reached the consumer markets to the extent that we would want. And so we're going to have to make sure that in the release of the second tranche that there are technical ways to ensure that the funds are not being hoarded, but actually going to consumer markets and consumer credit.
One possible defense of TARP 1 is that for all the criticism that it's been getting, the threat of massive bank failures does seem to have abated, at least for now. And that was the real danger back in September when this was rushed through, that so many banks would go under due to their mortgage crises that the FDIC would be swamped and Americans would stage bank runs like the 1930s.
Right.
And we'd see something actually much worse than the recession that we're having that's bad enough. So maybe the flexibility of TARP 1 has been a good thing because the banks are using it to do what they see as needed to strengthen their fundamentals. Do you buy that argument at all?
Well, which is exactly why when we passed the Recovery Act that we insisted that it be done in increments. And the first increment was, in fact, the first tranche, designed to avert a crisis. Now, the problem, Brian, as you know, is you can't prove a negative. You can't prove to people how bad it would have been without the assistance. And as I said before, there is evidence that there has been a slow thawing of some of the credit markets. That's in the past. It's now up to Congress to release the second tranche, and if we do so, we've got to make sure that the benefit is targeted to areas that have not yet benefited from the release of the first phase of funding.
Now, tell me about the foreclosure relief elements of the new bill that seem likely, and I guess this is what happens when you have Congress and the president from the same party. The leaders talk, and then the bill probably gets passed. I realize they have to get past the 60-vote thing in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But the foreclosure relief elements, do you know how that would happen, how that would work? Which families on the verge of foreclosure would be helped? How would that work in Long Island, for example?
Look, I'm not going to speak above my pay grade. The terms of the foreclosure elements are being negotiated between the Obama transition team and the Financial Services Committee and the leadership of the House and the Senate. And I don't attend those meetings, so I'm not going to speak above my pay grade. I can tell you that the foreclosure crisis is still very real, not only on Long Island, but throughout the state. In my neighborhood, in Suffolk County, we're still seeing a significant number of foreclosures. The average homeowner in Suffolk County who's not in foreclosure has lost about $15,000 in equity on their homes just because of foreclosures on their blocks or in their neighborhoods. And so the TARP has not yet fully settled down that problem, and that's why I think it's so important for us to ensure that either any funds provided to financial institutions either be relent or invested in some foreclosure relief elements so that we can address that very real and lingering problem.
Now, listeners, we have about 5 minutes for calls on this, and we're going to talk to Congressman Israel about a couple of other things, too. But so many of you were opposed to TARP 1, some from the left, some from the right. But the overwhelming consensus of our callers and those who posted on our webpages was no to TARP 1, even as the leadership from both parties said it was absolutely necessary to save the economy back in the fall. What do you think about TARP 2? What do you think about TARP 2, the way it's being laid out here by Congressman Israel, by Congressman Frank, by President-elect Obama? Should Congress pass and release this additional $350 billion tranche? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Congressman, you are interested in succeeding Hillary Clinton in the Senate. We've had many of the hopefuls on here in recent days. Did you fill out one of the governor's questionnaires?
I filled out the form, 28 pages. He now knows more about me than I knew about myself before vetting myself and doing all the research. He's going to make a decision within the next few days, I believe. And whatever decision he makes, I think, is going to be very good for the state, for the entire state of New York.
What do you think makes a good senator from New York?
There are several things. Number one, you've got to be able to deliver at a critical time in the financial history of New York. You've got to know where how the appropriations process works. You've got to know how to deliver infrastructure funding, and you've got to know how to deliver operating relief to state and local governments. And I was a town councilman in Huntington on Long Island for 8 years. I understand the crushing burden of mandates. I understand that it's important to build infrastructure, but the federal government also has an opportunity and a responsibility to provide operating cost relief to state and local governments, which helps stabilize property taxes. Secondly, you've got to know your way around the place, and you've got to be able to have bipartisan relationships. One of the things I'm most proud of in my own service in the House is forming the House Center Aisle Caucus. I may disagree with Republicans, but I don't feel the need to hit them over the head with a, you know, a sledgehammer. And so I think you've got to build relationships to get things done. And third and finally, as most people know, politically, you got to be able to win this seat in 2010 and win it again in 2012. And my guess is that the Republicans are not going to give anybody a free ride in either of those years. So you've got to be able to appeal throughout the entire state of New York, win the faith of voters in all four corners, and get reelected.
You talk about knowing your way around. Do you think Caroline Kennedy is too inexperienced to be the next senator?
I won't make judgments about anybody but myself, except to say that anybody on the governor's list is worthy of consideration. You don't get on that list unless you have something to offer. And each of us on the list, Brian, has a unique set of advantages and disadvantages, and it's up to the governor to weigh those advantages and disadvantages and make the best decision that he can, and I'm confident that he will.
Congressman Steve Israel from Long Island, my guest on WNYC, one of what's now reported to be about 10 people who Governor Patterson still considering to be the next senator from New York after Hillary Clinton is presumably confirmed. We will dip more into her confirmation hearings for Secretary of State in a few minutes. And we've had, you know, most of those 10 on by now. Congresswoman Maloney coming on later in the week. So I'll just give a little shout out here to Andrew Cuomo and to Caroline Kennedy and say that Steve Israel and his colleagues are keeping the seat warm for you. So, Mr. Attorney General, Ms. Kennedy, you know, come on and make your case. You want to stick around just a few more minutes and take some calls on the TARP?
Absolutely.
Bob on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob. Bob, do we have to put him on another phone bank there? Is he on the wrong? Is he on the wrong phone bank? Sorry for the technical information, folks. Bob, I think we got you now. Hi.
Okay. My question is for both TARP 1 and TARP 2. When the money is repaid for the mortgages and these assets are realized, does that come back into the general revenue and is spent again, or is it going to pay down the debt?
Bob, the reimbursements and the repayment to the federal government are meant principally meant to offset the release of the $750 billion or the segments of the $750 billion. So no strong decisions have been made with respect to whether it's going to pay down debt or be used in any other way other than to offset the initial obligation of the $750 billion.
Susan in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I just want to say that I'm absolutely opposed to one more cent being spent until every penny they've already spent is accounted for. It is outrageous that they've let the banks just walk away with hundreds of billions of dollars, thumb their noses, absolutely unaccountable, while they try to make the auto workers for a relatively small amount of money, $25 billion, but still, compared to what the banks got, while they make them take third world wages and benefits. I mean, it's just horrifying, and this is absolutely and utterly corrupt, and they shouldn't hand out one more cent.
Susan, thank you. Does that also rankle you, Congressman, the difference between the way the banks are being treated and the way the auto workers through the auto bailout are being treated?
Oh, absolutely, and I think it reflects kind of a double standard and a great deal of hypocrisy on the floor of the House of Representatives. When some of my colleagues rushed to help the most powerful financial institutions on the face of the planet and then stand with me on Hardball, you know, with Chris Matthews debating me about why the taxpayer shouldn't help an auto worker in Lackawanna or Rochester or Buffalo or an auto salesperson in Manhattan or Long Island.
And she mentioned the transparency, and I read something today about the Treasury Secretary maybe starting now to ask and demand that the banks actually reveal how they've been using the TARP money. Is that changing?
Critically important for us to insist on transparency. Now, I will tell you that when TARP 1 was being formulated, Secretary Paulson was on a conference call with members of Congress, myself included, where he said that every single transaction was going to be posted on the Internet, that there would be a transparency. People would know about transactions, when they occurred, before they occurred, and after they occurred. And I'm not satisfied with that. But that shouldn't surprise anybody. This is an administration that doesn't exactly like to talk about what it's doing. One thing we do have going for us, one thing we do have in our favor, quite honestly, and I respect what Susan is saying, is having a new Secretary of Treasury and a new administration that is more committed to transparency and openness will be a benefit to the release of TARP 2, if in fact it happens.
One more call. Richard from Plainview. You're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'm against TARP 1 and TARP 2, and what in all these weeks conversation where employers are laying off employees, nowhere is government talking about shrinking government. My town taxes in Plainview are exceeding my mortgage. Mm-hmm. If at the end of the day do not have money to spend because they're being overburdened in taxes, it doesn't matter TARP 1, TARP 2, TARP 3, TARP 10. At the end of the day, you have to have the people have to have the ability to save. If they will save, they will spend. But everyone is shrinking, but government is not shrinking. I find it absurd.
Richard, I'm curious. Do you think that if the government at the federal level wasn't spending so much to bail out the banks and other elements of the economy, do you think your property taxes on Long Island would be going up or going down? Richard, did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
That question was for you.
Oh, sorry. Could you repeat that, sorry?
If the federal government wasn't spending so much today to try to keep the economy afloat, do you think that would send your property taxes down or up?
Well, I don't know if it would send it down. They could, instead of giving money to banks, I think the government also needs to look at itself as a employer, if you would like.
Mm-hmm.
You had on your show not about a week ago what the average municipal worker was making with benefits and salaries. Close to $104,000
here in New York City.
Well, look at the middle class and see what is the average person working.
Right.
We, the taxpayer, are paying into a system that we benefit, that 90% of the people get no benefit. You have 40 million people unemployed. You have 40 million people uninsured. You are taking the majority of the people and squeezing them to a point where you cannot continually squeeze them.
And, Richard, we have to leave it there for time. I appreciate your call. By the way, Congressman Wiener seems ready to go after Mayor Bloomberg, if in fact he runs against him for mayor, on the very issue that Richard just raised about municipal employee salaries. But Congressman Israel, we have 1 minute left in the segment. Anything you want to say?
Very quick response to Richard. One of the reasons that his property taxes are so high on Long Island is because the federal government has neglected its obligations to invest in the middle class. You know, one of the reasons property taxes is high is because infrastructure costs for state and local governments are high. The federal government used to pay 87 cents on the dollar to help. Now they pay nothing. The result is that local taxing jurisdictions are raising taxes. That's why this economic stimulus is important, and that's why this infrastructure investment is critically important. We can reduce local property taxes, which is the biggest piece of the tax bill, if the federal government would do two things: reinvest in the middle class and shrink itself of kind of antiquated relics of government from many years ago.
Congressman Steve Israel, Democrat from Long Island, one of the applicants to replace Hillary Clinton for the U.S. Senate, if Governor Patterson so chooses him after Hillary Clinton is confirmed as Secretary of State. Congressman, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
And here is Senator Clinton from just moments ago, her opening statement at her confirmation hearing.
I believe that American leadership has been wanting, but is still wanted. We must use what has been called smart power, the full range of tools at our disposal, diplomatic, economic, military, political, legal, and cultural, picking the right tool or combination of tools for each situation. With smart power, diplomacy will be the vanguard of our foreign policy. This is not a radical idea. The ancient Roman poet Terence declared that in every endeavor, the seemly course for wise men is to try persuasion first. The same truth binds wise women as well.
Senator Hillary Clinton speaking at her confirmation hearing to be Secretary of State. We'll keep bringing you excerpts from that hearing all morning long. And coming up in a minute, we have a 10-minute call-in. What are you doing in the recession for free that you used to get paid for? 212-433-WNYC. What are you doing in the recession for free that you used to get paid for? Stay tuned.